going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Audio courtesy of FanDuel TV. 2-0 series, Tone. 2-0 series.
Yeah, what a game. What a surprising game that looked like it was going to be a total rout. Cavaliers shot insanely well from three-point range, 22 threes in a playoff game, and yet two-point game with about 4.5 minutes to go.
So a lot of people, you start to go, how am I going to explain this away? How is this going to happen? Because it was a 19-point game, and did you think about going to bed?
No, I wanted to see the Magic game, the Magic-Celtics game. I was scouting.
How long were you up?
Well, it was on at the same time. Remember, that game started a half hour earlier.
That's right. So you turned over to the Celtics game?
Yeah, I was flipping back and forth.
Okay. Well, I mean, you can watch two things at once with Extend Technologies.
I thought that the way that game was going, normally you hit that many threes, everybody's playing well, everybody's shooting well. I remember when Okoro even hit the three in a corner, I'm like, well, this is about all she wrote. No real reason to sink your teeth into much more. I mean, the Cavs have the benefits. They have all the advantages personnel-wise. They've got the better team. They're deeper. They're better. They have a superstar in Donovan Mitchell, who at that point hadn't really come alive yet. He was the one guy that was kind of inefficient. And then I'm checking in because the Celtics were in trouble. They had Porzingis go down. Remember, they didn't have Tatum. Porzingis was bleeding all over the place. And I'm like, it's going to be a huge night for the Cavs where they could rest all their starters in the fourth and maybe, just maybe, the Magic could pull off the upset in Boston, tie up that series, and really make the Boston Celtics work extra hard. So that was what was on my mind.
But that's a hell of a thought that you had right there. A lot of people, I was looking at social media, obviously people were freaking out because it got down to four, got down to a couple of points. It became tense, and I didn't truly believe they could have wasted the game. I didn't truly believe that. But I just refuse to let myself. I go, there's no way they collapse when they're up by 19. There's no way that this is going to happen. And it ended up not happening. They ended up taking care of business at the very end. It did get a little bit tight. Donovan Mitchell spoke about that, and we'll talk about him here in a second. Kenny Atkinson, he spoke in the postgame, obviously, as head coaches are wont to do. Kenny had looked at it and said, well, we got some things we need to clean up.
Knew it was going to be a dogfight. I think we missed a ton of shots in that second half. A lot of open shots, I think, but we got to do a better job, right? When we can't be a make or miss team. Like, oh man, we were missing, and now they're grabbing offensive rebounds, and Tyler got loose on us. So we got things to clean up, but really proud of the guys for holding their composure.
What do you think of what Kenny just said?
Man, you can overstate it. I know Kenny's given a very disciplined answer, whatever. They had Donovan Mitchell. I mean, Donovan Mitchell was the difference. Donovan Mitchell came alive. He just decided, as often happens in playoff basketball, superstars got to just make shots. Sometimes you got to force them, too. It's not like a lot of those were in the flow of the offense. They were just come down, shoot a three. We saw LeBron James do that many times. And if they're not going to come out and extend all the way out, regardless of whether you're having a good night or a bad night, because it kind of took him a little bit longer while everybody else was shooting a high percentage, he wasn't. And then in the fourth quarter, he just said, I'm taking over this basketball game. Doesn't matter. If they come out and pick me up, if they put a hand up, that doesn't matter if I'm 25 feet, 28 feet.
It was a nice feeling.
I'm just going to take over the basketball game. It's nice to have a guy like that.
I had one person in the comeback in the fourth at Miami was making, send a message to me about, where's our guy? I'm like, relax for a second. It's nice to have him on the floor. Now, obviously, against Boston, I don't know if you're going to have that same type of advantage because you got great players over there, but they're bleeding like crazy over there. So that's something that we're going to get into a little bit later. However, Kenny Atkinson went a little bit further in his press conference and was asked a few more questions and talked about taking on Miami and taking that first punch in the first quarter.
I told the guys after the first quarter, I said, that's it. We took the punch. They hit us. They're coming at us hard. They were super physical, super high energy, and we just supported that first quarter. And I thought we kind of held our ground. I said we just got to do it longer. I felt like 48 minutes we were gonna get them, but it was important to withstand that first blow for them in the first quarter.
The question is for me. Well, two things. One, is the series over already? Hold off on that just a moment. Two, did the Cavs need a game like that? For the short term of the series and the long term, seems that Donovan Mitchell thinks they did.
I love the fact that, you know, the game happened like this. I'd much rather this than, you know, win by 20 like we did the other night, back-to-back, especially going into an environment like we are. We had to really find a way as a group. You know, we were up. We did a lot of things positive, did some negative things, and then we responded. You know what I mean? So I think that's just going to help on a night-to-night basis.
What were the first couple of games? The first couple of games against Orlando last year were blowouts, right?
Yeah.
We blew their doors off of 40 one night.
Did not seem competitive.
So I think he goes back to what that was. I think there's two questions that you and I have to answer right now. One, was this something that was needed? Donovan seems to think it is. Now, is that lip service or is that something that you believe is true? Tell me.
I don't know if it was needed. Obviously, I would have loved if all our guys could have just sat out the fourth quarter rather than having to play. Now, the good news is, I don't think any of them are real, real banged up. I do know Darius was limping throughout most of the fourth quarter, and he stayed in the game. So if they had to play a game today, you know, would that be trouble? I know, you know, Max Strus looked like a heating pad on at one point in the fourth quarter before he came back into the game. So, you know, it would have been nice to just have those guys on the bench and just have a laugher. They didn't. So is it nice that they had a little bit of adversity? Sure, I can understand what he's saying there.
Using the A word again.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I mean, normally you shoot as well as the Cavs do, and that's it. I mean, 22 threes on 49% from the field. In the regular season, that's normally a 30 to 40 point blowout. So the fact that it was even a 2-point game, you know, shows you that the Cavs still do have a few weaknesses that teams can go after. Like, that was the surprising part to me, is how the Heat were able, Davion Mitchell and Tyler Hero abused our perimeter defense, which surprised me. I didn't see that as something that I thought. Like, normally, you know where teams are kind of going to pick you apart. Yeah, every team's going to attack Darius, and the Heat did it really from the start of the game. But the fact that they had that much success to get back into the ballgame, you know, that's going to be something for Kenny to definitely get them. Did they fall asleep a little bit? Did the fact that they had the big lead, is that what maybe took over their psyche? Because you see that in a regular season. So many regular season games.
Well, they just end like that.
Well, yeah, you're up big because, you know, it's because of the three-point shot, teams can always get back in it. But again, you outscored Miami from three by 18 points. I think that was a surprise. I think if the Cavs are being honest, they are very surprised that they would shoot That's as what the Cavs might not have another game in the playoffs where they hit 22 threes.
Yeah, but at the same time,
it's a one possession game in the fourth.
Miami, I know they went cold there in the middle, but I didn't think that they were. I don't think anybody thought that Miami was playing particularly bad. I mean, from the field, I think they were still over 50% for the night. Yeah, they were still over 50% for the night. So I thought Miami was playing good. I just thought for a long stretch that the Cavs were playing far better.
They were.
And then when the Cavs went cold, and boy, did they go cold at the worst time possible, end of the third, into the fourth, that's when Miami was still a warm basketball team, were able to go on a 13-2 run, change the way that people saw this basketball game, and then were able to get right back in it. Now, there were a couple of situations that I thought could have been cleaned up. I don't know why. Do they trust Evan Mobley down the stretch? Do they trust him down the stretch? Like, there's more questions than answers on that. Do they trust him down the stretch?
Well, trust him is in how, like, they're not going to run.
Because he kind of got taken out of the offense.
They're not going to run a ton of plays. He's not at that stage of his career. Like, when you watch teams like the Denver Nuggets, I mean, 100% of the plays are going to go through one guy.
Jokic, okay, yes.
We're not remotely there. Like, even the KG comparisons. Like, they're not remotely there yet with Evan. They're not just going to throw the ball into him, wait to see if a double team comes and get an offense. That's not the way this team is built right now. This team is still going to be, at the end, it's going to be big moments. Donovan Mitchell with the ball. Does somebody come up and set a screen? Do they want a little screen? Do they want a big little screen? Like, how do they want to operate? And then as you get closer to the end of the shot clock, clear out. I'm just going to work.
It was still the typical playoff basketball that is, it's going to turn into clear out. One guy's going to take over, and it's going to become something of a one-on-one basketball game. Davion Mitchell is very impressive. I think a lot of people are getting to know this guy who are Cavs fans. Very impressive in this game. A formidable foe, if you will. The question also is, are you willing to declare the series over? Yeah. I don't think are.
Oh yeah, they don't have the guys. I mean, they need to rely on so much that I don't think they're going to be able to rely on from game to game.
Like, I don't think the series is over.
Oh yeah, I mean they were 12-point favorites in that game. They were 12-point favorites in the opening game. They'll still be favorites on the road in Miami. I still would be kind of surprised at this point if it's not a sweep. I think they took a nice punch there in the fourth. I give credit to Miami for being able to hang in there. But yeah, this series is over. I think you could start to mentally get ready for the Indiana Pacers, most likely.
Are you serious? You think the series is over?
Yeah.
216-474-0092. They gave up a 19-point lead. They did not cover the spread last night. Not that that matters. They still won.
Oh, it mattered to some people.
They gave up a 19. Well, for you and I, it doesn't. They gave up a 19-point lead. I don't think that they nearly coughed it up. I did not think that they were going to choke and lose. But they still gave up that lead. It's still Miami. It's still a smart basketball team. If they had Jimmy Butler, it would be different. But ifs and buts, candy and nuts, and all the other stuff.
Maybe I'd be a little more scared that the series could be prolonged.
Yeah.
But I still said yesterday, before the game, I'm like, even if they had Jimmy Butler, I'd still pick us in probably five or six.
Holy God, you almost made me cuss at you.
The Cavs are way better than the Heat. They were way better
good.
All year.
They're really, really, really good. But damn, like, I don't know. I don't think the series is just over.
No, with that said, I thought the series was well over last year when the Cavs were up 2-0. I was stunned.
So you didn't learn a lesson from last year?
Well, I think the Cavs are way better than they were last year. And this Heat team, I was very surprised they got back into it because in the second quarter, the Heat were playing regular season G League defense.
I agree with.
They were not closing out. They were just giving like Max Strus. They weren't even contesting shots. They weren't getting back in transition. They weren't getting loose balls. It was almost very sad to see the Heat culture, you know, go poof.
Listen
like that.
And
then they showed some fight. I will give them credit because Davion Mitchell and Tyler Hero were outplaying Darius and Donovan up until Donovan went ballistic there at the end and scored 17 in the fourth.
All right, 216-474-0092. You agree with Tone? Is the series over? I got to learn from last year. This is a tough team that you're playing. I think that they are better than what. Well, I don't know if they're better than what you faced last year with Orlando. I got to tell you that because that's the team that still had Jalen Suggs and that's the team that had Mo Wagner. But I think I still have to go back to last year and go, man, you beat that team so badly. And I know that this team is better. I understand that. But damn, series over. I still got to get a win on Saturday. If they get it to 3-0, obviously, on the road, it's like, okay, then that's it. But damn, I can't bring myself to say, and I'm a positive guy, I can't bring myself to say the series is over. I'm very surprised
that,
you're saying
this. Is that a lack of faith in the Cavs because you just haven't seen this team?
It's just me being respectful.
Have a lot of playoff
success? Just me being respectful to the history. I think that's what it is. I don't want to start shooting my mouth off considering where last year went, where I'm sitting on a cruise ship last year in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. Yes, congratulations on all my success. But I'm sitting on a cruise ship checking my phone because I'm in international waters and I couldn't get the game, which, by the way, a bunch of other people couldn't get the game, apparently. We'll get into that later on. But I'm furiously checking, and then in the first half I go, oh, my God, they're going to lose the series. They're going to lose the series to the Orlando Magic. I cannot freaking believe. And I'm going, well, at least Lima has to deal with all this because I can't even send a tweet, so forget it. To now, they're up 2-0, same thing. They beat up on Miami in game one, even though it was a little tighter than what the final score indicates. They go out to a huge lead in game two. That lead closes to within a possession. And they end up winning. Great win. A good performance. It's playoff basketball. And because it's playoff basketball, no, I cannot say the series is over yet. So I ask you guys, do you guys agree with Tone? 216-474-0092. Is this series over? I'm hearing tough talking Tone.
Let's get a little bit more insight. We turn to the other faction of the NBA. It's NBA.com. It's John Schumann. He's been with us before. And make sure you read his stuff on the Knicks-Pistons series. Wow, good stuff. The takeaways from that game. And John right now is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
We are doing good. We're getting set for game two here. What were your thoughts on game one between the Cavs and the Heat? And what were you able to kind of digest in that game?
Ty Jerome, lots of yeah. Ty Jerome. You know what? Like, you know, the Cavs had the number one offense in the regular season, and they had the most efficient offensive performance in game one over the weekend. So there was no slowing them down. You know, obviously Jerome was remarkably efficient, but they got, you know, big performances across the board. And I think, you know, maybe the one concern for them going in was rebounding, but the Heat aren't a great offensive rebounding team, and that sort of wasn't too much of an issue in game one. So, you know, we'll see going forward. I think maybe we may see more zone from the Heat going forward. They didn't play a lot in game one. They played more, I think, in the regular season meetings. And, you know, if they're going to have any sort of hope in slowing the Cavs down, they're going to probably have to mix things up defensively a little bit more.
John, the Heat, the first 10 seed to make it into the playoffs, but they're the Heat. They're Eric Spoelstra. You still have Bam Adebayo. You have Tyler Hero. They're not the Heat teams of the past. Do you think they're capable of putting together a couple of good efforts and giving the Cavs a challenge here, or do you think this is a 4 or 5 game series?
I would say it's 4 or 5 game series, but that doesn't mean it's going to be easy or as easy as game one was, you know, going forward. They're a tough team. Hero is a very good offensive player. Like he's the sort of one challenge the Cavs have defensively and just making sure, you know, they can then handle a sort of a ball handler who can shoot like that off the dribble, because they're going to see more of those going forward in the playoffs. And like I said, rebounding is going to be a key. Yeah, I think they're a tough team. Like, they are the Heat. Like you said, they're actually, like, the Heat in the regular season were statistically better than that Heat team 2 years ago that went to the finals. Like, that finals team had been outscored in the regular season. This one was a little bit better than that, at least statistically, not record-wise. So they are, you know, they have the ability to throw lots of different defenses at you. Adebayo, we know, is a terrific defender. And so, yeah, I think there are challenges within it, but the Cavs are, you know, they're the best team in the East, or were the best team in the East all season. they should be able to take care of business.
So at what point, like, I think Cavs fans are trying to figure, they're like, okay, they won by 21 in game one. It was an extremely guard-dominated game with Garland and Mitchell, and then as we talked about, Ty Jerome being able to step it up. How important is it for them to get Evan Mobley involved more than just 10 shots in a game, or Jared Allen making sure he's getting more than eight, and, you know, and making sure that Mobley can get into double figures? Like, how important is that going to be, not only maybe in this Miami series, but if they're able to advance?
I mean, for sure you would like Mobley to have, you know, build some offensive confidence, I guess, going forward in the playoffs. But I think, you know, I'm not one to sort of worry about what in certain individuals are doing. In a, if you win the game and you have an efficient performance as the Cavs did the other day, you take it, and like, you take what the defense gives you. And if the defense is allowing the guards to operate as much as they did the other day, then you take that and you allow them to that. You have the talent in the backcourt to win games like that. But for sure, yeah, you would love, you know, to have Mobley, like I said, you know, have a big game. So he knows going forward, he can come up big in big moments like that. But like I said, like, you take what the other team gives you. You got to play, you know, the game that's, you got to make the right plays. And I think the Cavs guards were doing that the other day.
John Schumann joining us from NBA.com. John, with that thought in mind, does Miami think, okay, well, that didn't work, so now we got to try and, you know, body up the guards, make sure we don't give them a whole lot of space, and hope they don't get hot? Donovan Mitchell did a great job getting to the basket, so that's where he got a ton of his points. Do they try a different course and maybe try to get Jared Allen and Evan Mobley to beat you if you're Miami? Or do they just hope maybe the Cavaliers guards just don't hit shots like they hit the other day?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's always the question after game one, right? Like, do we have to change what we're doing, or do we have to do what we're doing better? Like, do we have to just be better at at the initial game plan, right? Like, you could call for adjustments, but if the team didn't execute the initial game plan in the right way, then adjustments aren't necessary, really. But I do think, yeah, they could do a better job of keeping those guards in front, and that may be, like I said, more zone. It could be more switching on the pick and roll, right? Like, and just saying, you know, bam, switch onto those guys and try to keep, you know, swallow them up and force somebody else, you know, force the ball to move and have somebody else beat you. You know, I think that's definitely the sort of the number one thing to watch in game two is how much zone we see, and then how much switching do we see on the pick and roll.
John, how much fun is this Ty Jerome story? I mean, everything he touched in the fourth quarter it turned to gold.
That's silly.
In game one. He is fun to watch, and just a great comeback story.
It's incredible. It's a real shame that, like, he wasn't eligible for Most Improved award, like, because I think that's definitely his. Like, he's it's the classic Most Improved story, right? Like, a guy that barely played last year and then just having a big role on a really good team, you know, and a guy that wasn't, you know, and wasn't like a top draft pick either, right? Right. You guys can tell me like where he was drafted. I don't remember, but like that, and having played multiple years in the league, right? Like, low draft pick, played multiple years, never really had a big role, and then now just being such an important part of one of the best teams in the league.
John Schumann joining us from NBA.com. You've got a story out after last night's Knicks-Pistons game, taking some thoughts about that one. The Pistons were just terrible in game one, a 21-0 run by the Knicks. I mean, they were good until then, and then it just went bye-bye. What did you think last night? Can the Pistons pull that off? JB certainly has some experience going against the Knicks in the playoffs.
Yes, and I do think the Pistons have looked certainly like the better team in this series. They, you know, you take away that 21-0 run from the Knicks, which happened super quickly. They probably should be up 2-0. They almost melted down again last night, but then just got a huge shot from Dennis Schroeder in the final minute, taking advantage of Jalen Brunson on defense, which is the one thing they've done quite a bit of in this series, more than the Cavs did when J.B. Bickerstaff was coaching the Cavs a couple of years ago. They've put him in more sort of pick-and-roll actions than other playoff opponents have done in the past, and that has paid off. Like, they've really scored efficiently when they put Brunson in the pick-and-roll. I think it's, like, the obvious, game plan to do. Like, this is the Knicks' best player, but he's a liability on the defensive end of the floor. Put him into action and take advantage. And that's the thing about the Knicks. Like, is they're a really good team and a great offense, but their two best offensive players can be attacked on the other end of the floor. You can put Brunson in action. You could put Karl Anthony Towns in action, and you can take advantage. That being said, the defense was also really good for Detroit last night. It was only the third time all season that the Knicks have been held under a point per possession. So that's that end of the floor is also important. Brunson was good, but not great. Like, he made some mistakes in that game. He scored 37 points, I think, but wasn't particularly efficient. And then Karl Anthony Towns did not score after halftime, and he barely touched the ball. And that's because, the Knicks offense can get really Brunson heavy at times.
Are you leaning, or were you leaning, Cavs Celtics Eastern Conference Finals when this whole thing started?
For sure, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're all waiting for. Obviously, like, there are some tough challenges. Like, Detroit and New York are really good. So Boston will have a tougher challenge in the second round for sure. Indiana is really good. And Milwaukee is obviously dangerous just because, given their top line talent. So yes, both teams should face tougher challenges in the second round. And there's, definitely things to watch in those series. But yes, I think we're all sort of waiting for Cavs Celtics in the conference finals.
If you're the Cavs, who would concern you more in a second round matchup if you're able to get there? Would it be Indiana? Would it be Milwaukee?
I would say Indiana. Pacers are just a pain in the butt to guard. They lead the league in ball movement. They're top five in player movement, just like how much the bodies move on offense. They are really tough to defend. And it's not just all Tyrese Halliburton. Pascal Siakam is a tough matchup. I know the Cavs were not sort of whole when they lost to the Pacers down the stretch of the season. So it's not, I don't think you take any away from that. I just think that Indiana is an improved defensive team from last year, and just really a high octane offense that's difficult to defend. And so that will be a challenge. I think Cleveland should win that series if that was the matchup, but I think they're the tougher sort of, I would fear them a little bit more because they're going to wear you out, especially defensively.
John, how important is this for Donovan Mitchell? Like, I thought, he had the week off, or he had a little bit more than a week, a little bit of time to get ready for game one against Miami. And when I was watching him begin the game, I'm like, man, he looks so refreshed. And how much of it can he have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder to prove to folks that he can win in the playoffs and that he should be talked about when we're talking about the best players in the league?
Sure, I guess. I don't really think of it that way, but that makes sense. I mean, he's had some terrific playoff series in the past with the Jazz. Like, he had, there was the bubble series, I remember, against Denver, where he was just ridiculous. And then the following year, he had another really good series, if I remember correctly. So it's not like he's thought of as a bad playoff performer or anything like that. So, but yeah, I mean, there is a championship in front of him, right? Like, he should that should be the number one motivation, is that you have a championship caliber team and the opportunity to win an NBA championship right now. Like, go out and get it. And as much as he may want to prove himself as the best player on the best team, like, he's got to, make the right decisions, make the right plays, be willing to defend, do all the little things, the dirty work that's needed to get his team to the top.
John, as always, we appreciate your perspective. Great stuff on the NBA. Looking forward to reading you at NBA.com. And, of course, make sure, if you haven't had a chance to check him out at NBA.com, read his takeaways from the Knicks and Pistons. John, thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Thanks, John.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Take care.
she's pretty confident that this series will end in four.
Yeah.
After last night,
I think most of the NBA, the national media, is there as well.
Which is different. I'm not used to the to them being that much on the Cavs bandwagon.
I think usually you get a gentleman sweep, right? That typically is the conversation. I think it's interesting. In the Oklahoma City series, we're just going four games. Boston series, they've muddied it up a little bit, but everyone's just going four games. And the Cavs are also going four games.
So I guess where I'm at with the series is, if the Cavs, if this thing doesn't end up in a sweep, it's because the Cavs gave one away, and that's it's not the worst thing that would happen, but it's what I don't want to have happen now.
Well, it basically would have been if they wouldn't have been able to close out yesterday.
Yeah. Well, no,
like,
I mean,
in that type of fashion.
I mean, I think that's what maybe Game 3 represents, because I don't think Miami's one of the toughest places to watch a game or play a game in. It's not the tensest atmosphere in the world, but it is going on the road. Like, you know, yesterday was, all right, you passed the test in Game 1. Now can you bring that same energy a second time? This, it's, you know, Game 3 on Saturday to me is about, all right, can you do it on the road? Like, we know the cliches that role players tend to struggle more on the road. They don't have that home cooking, so to speak. So this would be a game of like, all right, this is the one. I don't know that a Game 4 loss would upset me, but I want to see the Cavs continue to finish the job here.
Yeah, I think it would be nice, obviously, to see them just kind of step on their throat. And I think that's what the post-game audio and everything that they kind of got to, I think that's what that was all about, just kind of reminding themselves the job's not done.
Now, can we talk about that? Why aren't the Cavs getting any calls at home?
I don't know, because I don't want to be the Donaghy part of this, right? Where I don't think the NBA is trying to make this series closer so that it seems more interesting. I mean, I told you before, I've listened to national guys that are just outright saying they're not watching this series. There's just nothing they can get out of it. So I don't know. I don't think the NBA is like, hey, make this thing tight. I can't explain why the Cavs aren't getting the calls here.
Listen, there's a part of me that thinks that adversity is a good thing for the Cavs. Because the way the refs are calling, you know, the Cavs can be a bit of a rhythm team. I know Kenny wants to fight back on that. The Cavs can be a bit of a rhythm team.
There's a reason why Cavalanche exists and why we talk about it so much. That's part of being a rhythm team, is having Cavalanche.
And so there is a test within the idea of, hey, we're going to call these perfectly timed foul calls that are absolutely non-existent calls. While you're at home, no less. Like, there's a part of this that is infuriating as it feels in the moment. The reality is, I do see value in it, but man, I just continue to come back and go. It's, to me, respect is who's getting the whistles, when are you getting them, what type of whistles you're getting.
Oh, that's an interesting way to put that. Like,
Cavs,
respect attached to the whistle.
The Cavs are not getting the kind of respect they deserve, and the first place a team should get their respect. You don't get respect from other NBA players until the last second. You don't get respect from around the league in the media if you're in Cleveland till the last second.
All right, did you want to
hear the refs? That should be the first thing that
should
you get.
Should Atkinson be harder about this? Remember last year? I'm going to two different things here, okay? Last year, the Cavs got no calls in that Orlando series, and JB lost his mind consistently. He was right. The free throw discrepancy in that series was bananas. But I'm thinking about Tibbs. I'm thinking about Tibbs in the Detroit series, and after Game 2, what'd he do? He made a show of it.
Yeah, no,
made an absolute show of it.
Here's the thing. Kenny was as demonstrative as he could be last night.
He did that gif that went extremely viral.
There's nothing interesting about that, because everyone
was
right.
I've seen that more than I've seen anything
today.
It's the
single greatest challenge in NBA history.
Maybe that's why they're not getting calls.
He looked him dead ass in the eye.
Is he treating the refs like they've never reffed a game in their life and they're showing him up now?
He twirled his fingers to signal replay, like, I'm going to murder you with this pointer finger.
I mean, you want to talk about the bless your heart moment of it all. Like, that was it. As if refs had never reffed a game in their life.
But no, I mean, if you're not getting respect against a bum ass Heat team.
Did Atkinson make the refs mad, and this is why this is happening?
No, and listen.
Because it was very dismissive.
You brought up a really good point, which is should Atkinson go full Bickerstaff? It has so much more power when he does, if he would, because JB Bickerstaff always went full Bickerstaff.
Even when JB was right, it just kind of fell short.
JB never shut up.
Yeah.
He just always bitched about the referees. Kenny is so much more
controlled. You know what's interesting about that, too, though, is that I remember it vividly, is the free throw discrepancy between the Magic and the Cavs, and that it wasn't just Bickerstaff after those games. It fell into the responsibility of the players, and they started doing it as well, and we've seen none of that from these guys.
Now, what I think should have happened, because I do think, listen, I think the referees were in Kenny's head last night. I think they were in the player's head. This should be lesson learned. If this nonsense goes into Game 3, I need Kenny to put $50,000 on the line.
Okay, yeah. That's what I want to know. Like, when do you go Tibbs in the post game?
He should have last night.
Okay.
Post game, not in game. I don't think it makes a bit of difference. But post game, he should have put $50,000 of his own bucks up, and then Dan Gilbert should have discreetly paid it for him.
I like the idea of the owner sliding in and being like, "This one's I'll take this one."
This is why I'd be a broke ass NBA owner, because I'd be like, "If you lose $250, I'm gonna back you up. Don't you worry."
Like $50,000 is nothing to sneeze at.
It's not cheap.
Like,
cheap bill. You got $1 million fine? Your boys got you.
We know these guys make
unless
a lot of
you
money,
go full Draymond and knock out your own team.
Yeah, and that's always in play.
Like, that to me is maybe the most infuriating thing in the time here. The Heat are getting superstar calls. They don't have a superstar. They're not a good team. All they have is Eric Spoelstra, who, again, Hall of Fame coach. Good on him. They should not be getting the calls they're getting, especially. Listen, if they're getting these calls on the road, what kind of calls are they going to get at home on Saturday?
Well, and they don't have a bunch of foul merchants or anything like that. They don't have a bunch of guys that you're like, they consistently bait you into these calls. It feels very one-sided right now, and it does feel like the Cavs can't buy a call. And if I bought into conspiracy theories more, I'd say it's the NBA just making these games interesting is all it is. But I just can't do that.
I think it's bad officiating. But you know what? This is the problem with the NBA. Is I don't have a problem with superstar calls. I don't have a problem with the idea of you get this call at this time, but this guy doesn't.
People are different. They're officiated differently in this league. That was with the whole viral Ant and LeBron clip yesterday, was Ant being mad that LeBron was getting calls, and he's like, wait, what happened here? And everyone's like, it's LeBron.
Yeah. Well,
he gets to do this.
So I don't mind it. I understand that that's how the league works. Yeah. I'll defend it to a specific point.
But we don't have anyone on our team that gets that.
Well, but if you're a 64-win team, you should be getting those.
I know, and
we don't. Not the 37-win
team. You're right. We don't get those. Donovan doesn't get those calls. Garland doesn't get those calls. Mobley doesn't get those calls. And Jared Allen, I'll say this, Jared Allen I've seen complain about the refs more in these two games than I've ever seen him complain about the refs.
Yeah, that moving screen call last night was a joke. Or no, illegal screen call.
I told you after game one, I thought he was spending way too much time invested in his head about these refs. Because every time he looked over, he was complaining to the refs.
216-474-0092. We're not usually complain about the ref, guys. We are doing it here because the refs are doing a bad job. Also, sidebar.
Yeah.
Tracy Morgan playing Tony Brothers in an NBA referee movie. Tell me it wouldn't hit.
Yeah, I don't like Tracy Morgan as much as I used to. But I would watch that. But
do you like Walmart as much as you used to?
Easy now. That's that.
I just didn't know if they won the breakup.
Yeah, no, Tracy won the breakup with all the money attached to that. Okay. Yeah, he won that.
Maybe sympathy for Walmart being down $50 million
or so? In an SNL throwback for you, I haven't really liked Tracy Morgan since My Name is Brian Fellows.
Was that when you went out on
him? No, I liked him in that bit.
Okay.
And then after that bit, I can't think of anything I've liked
Rock?
Tracy Morgan. I never watched 30 Rock. I should have watched 30 Rock. I never watched 30 Rock. Got to get to the cleave.
216-474-0092.
I can't watch everything in life.
You were single then. You were a young kid in college or just out of college.
That was a of someone that like as if I.
I don't want to watch this hilarious show featuring one of the funniest people
TV
ever
or anything like that. Oh, there's a couple. It's a couple things I've missed, and 30 Rock is one of them.
Yeah, just
and
at a time
during COVID, I went back and watched everything I thought I had missed. And 30 Rock, COVID ended too prematurely.
I just don't see a lot of difference between you and Mac Robinson right now.
That's just disgusting.
Two guys
you
who've just never apparently seen a damn thing
that
in this country.
Oh, stop that. Stop that right now. You can say a lot about me, but that one was a bit much.
Back on Afternoon Drive, Nick Wilson, Jonathan Peterlin, live here from Razzles. I mean, it really is just, I'm going to continue to just brag about how good we have it today. One, we housed, I don't want to do the exact math, but we housed a lot of wings, let's just say it that way.
Were you impressed with the amount of wings that I ate?
Yes. Yeah. You and me crushed it. I think Mac was worried, as tends to happen at the station, that we were going to call him out for it. I'm actually a little disappointed that he didn't crush more wings, because this is a once in a life. And when you get it in free food and radio anymore, it's like is a unicorn. It's the Travis Hunter of experiences.
Yeah.
So when you get it and it's delicious, you take every wing you possibly can.
So I almost wondered if it was just him being courteous in many ways. Like, he like knew that we were both really going to town on it, and so yeah, he kind of held back. But now that you phrased it that way, I don't know, Mac. We might be having a wrong read here.
Part of me that wonders if maybe he was trying to be chivalrous with plenty of very nice female bartenders around.
Well, that is true. As we discussed earlier, you just can't eat wings and look proper in
That's
any
true.
Sort of way.
And I gave up on that many years ago.
Yeah, me
but
too.
I have not given up on the Cavs championship hopes. Our next guest had a great write-up. I'm just going to read you the headline here. Darius Garland and the Cavs are coming up clutch to talk about the Cavaliers, talk about the NBA playoffs, and so much more. We head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And welcome on Miren Fader of The Ringer. Miren, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, first off, we love your write-up. And a lot of that is, we really like when people write nice things about our favorite teams.
I get that.
So when it comes to, I guess, when it comes to the Darius part of the Cavs, you know, so much of the attention obviously goes to Donovan. The next guy down the totem pole is Evan Mobley. Where do you kind of factor in Darius, his clutchness, if that's a word, and kind of his importance to the Cavaliers?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the reasons why I wanted to do this article is because I felt like he isn't always talked about or given enough credit. But if you look at the rebuild, if you look at the way the records, you know, have changed over the years, his leadership, his maturation is so much a part of that. I think he shines because there's so many amazing people around him, like the talented stars that you named. But he's been the consistent one, and I think we can't not talk about the Cavs' growth without talking about his growth.
Yeah, it's a great point, because like if you just look at the core four, I mean, Darius was there. He was there back when it was Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, and we were trying to make that a thing. He was there before anyone, and we've watched him grow. We've watched him get better. We've also watched him take some setbacks, too, like last year where he battled through some injuries, didn't look as good. When you look at him in the postseason through two games, it seems like he's kind of wiped away some of the postseason concerns that we had from last year, and really he's done that all season long, Miren.
Absolutely. And the shooting is better, you know, from the way that the regular season ended. And I just feel like he is at his best. He is a competitive person. He's ready. He's older. He's wiser. And, you know, when you go through injuries like he did, from the jaw to the eye to even, you know, what he went through in college, there's just a different appreciation you have for the game. And I think that he's showing how well he and Donovan can work together, which a lot of people didn't think they could. So, you know, while I think he's so clutch, and, you know, my story, of course, starts with his amazing shot against Detroit earlier this year, what he does so well is make everyone else around him shine.
Miren, when it comes to the series we're currently in here, last night we got a little close there towards the end. But, you know, through two games, the Cavs really, when they've wanted to and played their game, have done just about anything they want. Do you expect this series to go beyond four games?
I don't think so. I mean, they're definitely going to take control of this and keep moving and end it as it's supposed to. I mean, I look at somebody like Ty Jerome, and I'm just in awe. Him alone, right? Like, I think they just have so many tools. It's got to be in four. And look at the way Mobley responded. I mean, when he's full force, when he's shooting the way he's shooting, when he, you know, looks back at the film and sees his mistakes and corrects, I mean, I don't think there's any team better right now.
Yeah, we've kind of debated here on the show just a little bit whether or not, because you're a national perspective. We're local, so we see things just a little bit differently, obviously, than you do. But when it comes to this Cavs team, would a championship be perceived as a Cavs championship, or to be perceived as a Donovan Mitchell title, and then everyone else is obviously there and important, but it'd be Donovan's title?
I mean, I'm somebody that, maybe it's because of my bias with this article, in that the theme was that everybody contributes, everybody eats, as Darius' brother Desmond said in the piece. I think it would and should, if it happens, be considered a team title, right? Like I mentioned Jerome, but there's so many pieces, and you look at, there's really not a big difference from last year. It's just health, new coach. So that really tells you something about the caliber of player and how so many people can be counted on to step up. So I think more national media should, you know, take the Cavs seriously and think of it as a collective thing rather than just, okay, Donovan bailed them out, you know, as he did at the last couple minutes last night.
Miren Fader on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And she's got a great write-up on the Ringer about this Cavs team and where they're going. What's the difference for this Cavs team of maybe getting over the hump and beating Boston a year earlier than maybe hoped, and maybe this going the way I think most of the NBA expects, which is that Boston will beat Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I mean, it's very much possible for them to upset Boston. I think, like, the difference clearly between the year ago is health, right? Like, if you don't have health, you don't have anything. But I think the offense that Kenny Atkinson has them doing, it's just the comfortability that they have with each other, and that is their biggest weapon. Like, look at the way that they're scoring, the amount of threes. I think that will be huge against, you know, a team like Boston, who themselves obviously can do the same thing. I think they're more than capable, especially because they're very cognizant of the way that people are doubting their chances. Darius was saying in my piece how it's something that motivates all of them.
Were you surprised that, obviously you talked to a few people in the piece, but Darius was the big voice there. And I feel like I've kind of made the connection that Darius is way more vocal this year than he had been in years prior. Do you feel like that it's like him recognizing he has to take on that himself, or it's just a good voice for the team? Why do you feel like that is, where he's just been way more open and really front and center when it comes to speaking to the media on behalf of the team?
Yeah, he mentioned that as being a big part of his evolution. And because I think when he got in the league, there was this sense of like not wanting to step on toes. And, you know, you're kind of learning as you go. You're sort of waiting to see what happens. It's the point guard, floor general, anybody playing that position, it's the hardest. And speaking up is something that I think it's very rare for younger players to do. And I think this year, knowing that he and Donovan can both be amazing together, and that there isn't just one voice in this locker room. There can be many. There can be many leaders. Darius talked about how important it is for everyone to hold each other accountable vocally. And so I think that he just recognizes that, like, part of growing, part of maturation, part of becoming a second-time All-Star is opening your mouth, right? It's not enough to just get the Gaudy stat line and be impressive and get the ball to your teammates. You also have to lead them vocally, and I think that's something that, you know, I know Coach Atkinson, like, really respects that he does.
Miren, I know it's very rare we ever get one-on-one in the NBA Finals, but this would be a really interesting year if it happens, because you're talking about two small market teams in the Cavs, in the Thunder. We've had different analysts say, you know, this Cavs matchup is what the NBA needs, or this Thunder matchup in the finals is what the NBA needs. How do you think the NBA would feel about a all small market OKC versus Cleveland NBA Finals?
I mean, I can just hear the think pieces right now about saying, oh, this is bad, and we need Boston back, and what's going on with the Lakers? I actually think it would be wonderful, because when I think of OKC and I think of the Cavs, you know, they're both similar in the fact that their front offices understand a bit of patience, right? They understand that playing with a young core and having them develop and go through struggles and get comfortable with each other actually pays off. That's why the Cavs are so good this year, not just because they have a new coach, new offense and health, but because they've been together for a really long time. I feel similarly with OKC, like the growth that can happen when you invest in players and have those kind of smart moves it just can't be overstated in this league where people want things to happen so quickly and development. And I mean, look at Jalen Williams. Like, I profiled him earlier this year, and like, I'm amazed at the growth he alone has had. So, if that's the finals matchup, I think you're going to just see really, really fundamentally sound basketball and also like great defense. I mean, I'm super excited if that happens.
You've written a book on Giannis. You've written a book now on Hakeem. You obviously, there's a part of you that gravitates towards the big men, the larger than life size of the NBA. When you see our big man, Evan Mobley, what do you see in the talent there?
Oh my God. So I profiled Evan when he was right before the draft. Evan is so good, and it's crazy that he's only really at the beginning of his superpowers. Like, he doesn't even, I mean, I think he knows, but he hasn't even actualized how good he can be. Look at the adjustment just from first game to this game. He's so smart, and that was one of the things that I really saw when I profiled him, is like, there's a constant curiosity in thinking about him. When he was a kid, he used to just try to figure out how things work. Like, he would watch the Discovery Channel all the time. He would try to figure out how to fix a tire, all these things. Like, he yes, physically has all the tools defensively, and now he's worked on his three-point shot. I mean, he's incredible. But it's the mental that separates him. And I think the mental and this capacity for growth and a growth-first mindset is what's going to just really make him one of the best young players in the league, I think, for sure.
All right, Miren, I'm going to ask you a very hacky sports talk radio topic.
The hackier, question. The better, as I always say.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's heard the other hacky questions I've asked her, but let's go. Flats or drumsticks when it comes to wings?
Flats.
All right. That felt like a very much a flip of the coin there.
You know, I was thinking you were going to ask me something about the Lakers, and I got drumsticks in the last, so I'm just rolling with it, y'all.
You're just bracing yourself for the 37th Luka question of the evening, yeah.
The NBA, did the NBA get Luka to L.A. there?
No, but I think all of us here are just like, what is this Christmas gift we've been given in the spring? It's hot outside. I'm confused. This entire thing is crazy. I still don't get it. I've read every report. It's just, you can't, it's like a soap opera. I can't stop watching.
I was so glad for the Lakers fans because they just have they really have not seen
down
enough superstars. Yeah. Like, you know, this is like their first superstar they've had in that franchise in 50 years. I was
never get a break on that regard.
Yeah, Miren. Thoughts and prayers. Miren, great stuff. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Take care, y'all.
Into what's going on with the Cavaliers and the Miami Heat in this first round matchup and the rest of the NBA. So on the line, Odyssey Sports NBA insider Danny Green. That's right, Danny Green. Insider calls are brought to you by Hyundai. We put your safety first above everything, and then everything else is second. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com. Danny, always a pleasure to have you on board. How are you?
What's happening, Danny?
I'm doing good, man. Pleasure's all mine. Appreciate you guys having me. It's always great to be here.
I got
to
tell you, Danny, things are crazy around here. Obviously, the Cavaliers' big win last night, too. NBA or NFL draft is tonight. So just before we get into basketball, I just want to ask you real quick. Were you a Giants fan, Jets fan? Where were you? You grew up right there, right? Was that your team?
I wasn't. I was a fan of certain players. I wasn't really a New York sports fan. Except for the Yankees, but most of the New York sports teams, I wasn't really a big fan of. I was a fan of certain players. When I played football, I was a quarterback, so I like certain quarterbacks.
And who was the quarterback you liked the most?
I mean, when I was young, it was like Dan Marino, Steve Young. Like, those are the guys back in the day. And then as I got older, you know, Peyton Manning. There's a bunch of a list of them. But Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers is one. I mean, you know, now I watch – you know, Lamar Jackson and Pat Mahomes do their thing, but Mike Vick was one. There's a couple guys that I watched and was like, you know, those guys are unbelievable. But Peyton Manning, I was a big Peyton Manning fan.
Hey, let me ask you this, because you understand this feeling of what it's like to sit around and wait to get picked, and you should have been picked earlier, even though we're happy the Cavs were the team that picked you.
I appreciate that,
you should have been a first rounder. I'll just say that. In fact, I think the Cavs owe you some money for that because they made a mistake, so they should send you a check.
I think they made up for it a little bit at the end, but it was cool.
They did. All right, so they gave you back. But what's it like on draft day, no matter what sport it is?
It's a lot of emotions, a range of emotions, and it's excitement. It's anxiety. You're anxious. And then I said, obviously, as you get drafted, as you see the draft going on, there's a bunch of other emotions that come with it. But it's all a roller coaster of emotions. And I don't think anybody is 100% happy unless you're the number one pick or in the first, like, well, the NFL is 10 rounds. So if you're a first round pick, then you're happy. But for us, it's only 2 rounds in the NBA. And unless you're a lottery, everybody outside of that is a little disappointed. Like, you know, I should have been higher. I should have been, you know, I was better than this guy. I had a better workout, or I should have been number one, or, you know, so for me being a second round, watching everybody go before you, even more anxious and more, you know, disappointment and some anger, you know, with certain people of being, you know, doubted so much. So it's a range of emotions though. But it, all in all, end of the day, it ends up, you know, being a great day and a start to your next chapter, your next career. So it's hard to appreciate it in the moment, but you appreciate it so much more afterwards.
Yeah, let's sit and let's pick some of the names that were picked before you and start making fun of those guys, right? And we can do that for a little while.
I had a really good draft class, though. I had a really good draft class, so it's going to be hard to make fun of the guys that were ahead of me.
Oh, you know, no, don't burn bridges, Danny. It's not worth it. Don't burn bridges.
I just thought it'd be fun to say that.
Yeah, I think we had some great guys, and some guys still hanging on. You know, I was the Blake Griffin, James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, you know, all those guys. Brandon Jennings, 2009, we had a really good draft class. So, yeah, it's tough to say. I should have been higher because those guys that were ahead of me were pretty good, and they had pretty good careers too.
All right, Cavaliers got up by 19 points in this game and ended up being a real close game toward the tail end of it. What causes teams to get up by that much? Do you just take your foot off the gas and that's how teams come back? Or was there an adjustment that you saw during that Cavs game last night?
I mean, it's the playoffs. Nothing is going to be easy, right? And no team's going to give up, especially Miami, when they have that Heat culture and they fight. You know, Spo makes some good adjustments. You know, Tyler Hero went off, played well. Obviously, Dom went off the fourth and helped y'all. But naturally, you know, it's hard. Naturally, in human nature, it's hard to beat a team multiple times. Also, keep your foot on the gas. And it's hard not to make some mistakes when you're up. But also, you know, you got to remember this is the NBA. And, you know, the game is going to be called differently when you're up 2-0 or when you're up 1-0 and you're up 20. You know, people are going to want to see a game. The referee is going to referee differently. You know, you're not going to be able to play with the same physicality. You know, they're going to give them a chance to get back in the game. So knowing that, especially going into Miami, but being up 2-0, you're going to be that much better to beat them, to be up 3-0, you know? So they're not going to let you walk in their building and beat them. And, you know, they're going to call the game differently. You don't know who your referee staff is going to be. It could be a tight call. It could be a loose, let you guys play. But yeah, you know, everybody knows how it goes with the politics of the game, but it's just not easy beating a team, you know, three times or being up on a team and them not fighting back. It's just going to happen. It's just human nature.
Danny, isn't it crazy that we have to, and I agree with everything you said. We actually had this conversation before that we shouldn't even know the referees' names, man. Let the guys play the game, you know?
For sure. I mean, I get what you're saying. You should not know they shouldn't be some significance of a stature.
Right.
They shouldn't have a name because it's not about them. So I'm with you on that one, but you know, today's world, this is how the world is. You know, it's a little bit softer, more sensitive place, and everybody has, you know, feelings, which is that I acknowledge them, and it's true. But back in the day, you know, I think a lot of the referees took their feelings out of it, let the guys play. You know, technical fouls happen more, and there's more of an emphasis because they want to see more sportsmanship, which I get it. They want to teach these young kids bad habits that are watching the game. But that's what makes the game so great. Is having the emotion in it, right? Allowing guys to show emotion and not get technical fouls. Allowing things to get a little bit chippy without throwing people out the game. It's a physical game. You know, we're competing. They want to win. These are grown men. You got to referee them differently than you would a youth game that's 12 and under, you know?
Yeah, I got to be honest. I can't remember the last time I turned on a TV because I wanted to see Tony Brothers. I wanted to see Danny Green. It drives me insane.
Tough. Tony, I have a great relationship with Tony, but he was always hard to play with as a referee on the floor for me. And, you know, when I talk to him, he jokes about it now. He goes, oh, if you ever get back in, you know, I'll give you some calls. I'm like, a little late now, Tony. But I always knew I had Tony, I had to be very careful because I was going to get two quick ones probably in that first quarter and have to sit most of the half. But, I get what you're saying. Some referees, I give them credit. It's not an easy job, especially at that older age, to keep up the game is so fast, the speed of the game. And I know players will never do it, but we need more young, active, or guys that retire players to referee the game. I think it'd be better. We'll have better referees. But I give them a lot of credit. It's hard to do, but some will actually talk to you. Some will listen. Some, you know, some won't. So that's the only issue I have is be consistent and allow us to talk to you. Some guys just think they know it all. Some guys don't care to hear it. And I get you get a lot of people in your ear, the coaches and everybody's on your ass. So you kind of eliminate that. But, you know, as a respected veteran, there's some vets out there and they just trying to approach me and ask what they did wrong. Yeah. Should be able to have a conversation. Adapt and adjust.
Yeah, last point on the referees, just because I want to make it quick. I thought you said something super important just now, that they played the game. There is nothing worse than watching somebody who tried to learn how to referee a game by reading the book. Those are the games I can't stand watching.
It's impossible because, I mean, there's some great journalists out there that never played. You know what I'm saying? So you can be a great referee if you played other sports. It just takes a little bit longer time, I think, to adapt and adjust to it. I think it's just easier for ex-players to know the speed, know because they played it, and know how to referee certain parts of the game, you know, because certain things is not everything is by the book, you know. A lot of it is feel, you know, and you can't teach that unless you've played it or refereed it for a long time. So
Danny Green joining us. Insider calls brought to you by Hyundai. Hyundai helps protect you and your family on the road. We put your safety first and everything else second. All right, Danny, the Cavaliers hit 11 three-pointers in the second quarter, setting a playoff record for most threes hit in a quarter. What is it like when a whole team catches fire like that? Because that was amazing last night.
Yeah, if you're the opposing team, it's nightmare as hell. When you're the team that's hitting them, you know, it's a great day. You know, it's like, all right, cool. Hopefully we get a couple more games like this in the playoffs because we're going to need them. But you just hope you don't run out of gas and run out of bullets. So you also don't want to get too careless and too free because that's when mistakes happen. So that's the biggest thing about playoffs. It's more mental than physical than anything. And staying locked in regardless of what the score is because there's so much time left in the game. And with the three-point line, every team is in the game because at any moment, the team could jump back in and be in the game. So you just got to mentally stay locked in and not let up at all.
I know the Cavs won that first game by 21 points, and you know, they got great play out of Ty Jerome, especially in the fourth quarter. But you kind of watched that game and said, I wish we would have just seen a little bit more out of Evan Mobley in game one. And then, boom, he gave it to you in game two. Mm-hmm. Can you assess his play and how important it was to make sure that, you know, the Cavaliers were able to get somebody other than a guard into the action to make sure that, you know, they're moving the ball?
That's the story of the Cavs all year long, right? Everybody, they have a bunch of stars. You know, three stars that are really good with Darius, Don, and Evan. But you got a bunch of other guys that are, you know, mini stars that can give you a stardom type game, and they step up. And you expect those guys to be, you know, balanced and give you the same thing night in, night out. But sometimes you don't need that. You know, sometimes Evan will just be a rim protector, roller, and give himself up and open up the floor for guys like Ty Jerome or Max Strus. But he gave you what you needed. He knocked down some threes. He was more aggressive. And so some nights you'll get a night like that out of Jared Allen. You might get that out of DeAndre Hunter. So you have so much depth and so many pieces that not every night that they have the pressure or need to score every night. They can do other things to help win the game, and that's what Don was doing. He's still scoring, but he's leading in other ways, and he's most of the season is taking a back seat and allowing his teammates to kind of flourish and add more value to the team.
Cats are playing 10 guys right now, Danny. Typically playoff rotations tighten up to about, you know, 7 or 8. It's kind of weird to see a team playing 10. What do you think of that?
Not weird. It's a strength. I love it. You know, I think it's best to have that anyway. I mean, teams that go 7 or 8, I think you're really cutting off and kind of hindering you because, you know, something happens like with Golden State, Jimmy gets hurt. Now it's like you got guys like Cam Spencer and Jonathan Kuminga who do not expect to play. Now they're like mentally not ready to be in the game like that, you know? It just makes your team, you know, gives you more weapons, gives you some more depth, and it allows your starters to get some rest and to be fresh for the fourth quarter. You know, Detroit is playing good basketball, but even as young as Cade is, him having to play that many minutes and being in fourth quarter, and you get to games 4, 5, and 6, it's going to be really tough on him to have those legs and be fresh under him when you don't have that type of bench or that type of depth. So this allows Don, Darius, and them to be good and play extra innings and longer stretches and still be fresh for games 5, 6, and 7 if it goes that far in the series.
Danny, is it mythical or is there a change during the playoffs about playing in Miami? Because, you know, it's like, oh, that's a Miami loss. It's not even a road loss anymore. It's a Miami loss.
It's very different in the playoffs because in the playoffs, you're not going out.
Right.
You're very much focused. You're very much locked in. During a regular season, you might have a couple extra days in there. You know, depending on what your record is, you might be like, oh, we have some time. We've been winning 4 or 5 in a row. You know, let's go out and have a night to hang out a little bit. or we might stay the night over. Guys might be thinking about it. At this point, guys ain't thinking about nothing but winning. So it's not one of those type of situations. This is the playoffs, and I would hope guys know what's at stake and take it seriously.
I don't know. I mean, being able to travel for a little bit around the league, I always felt like going to Miami was like...
Oh, that's a thing.
It's such a transient crowd. Like, it's not the same kind of crowd that you would get anywhere. No. Like, I think when they know the Heat are done, they know they're done, and they're walking out. They're walking out of the arena. Yeah, it's not they
for
don't.
Sure. I mean, that's yeah. a big city crowd mostly, unless yeah. you said it's different in like a Boston or New York. But you look at the LAs, the Chicago, like the big city crowds are like that, and especially cities where there's so much to do. They're kind of spoiled. In that sense, because there's so many things, so much else other going on. They don't need to be there for the game. You know, it's just it's another thing to do for them.
All right, Danny, did you see Darius Garland's comments after the game about Tyler Hero?
I did not.
I've got them for you here. I'm a little worried you said the quiet part out loud, okay? Here's Darius Garland after the game.
What's the key to playing clean basketball like that against a team like that?
Pick on Tyler Hero. And take care of the ball. Don't play in tight spaces and pick on their weak defenders. Go at them.
What do you think?
I think I agree with the whole second part. He didn't have to say the name.
Yeah. Don't say it out loud.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I'm Tyler, I'm going to take it a little more personal at this point. Probably on offensive end more than defensive end, but he'll still lock in defensively. But that's what the playoffs is about, right? You try to get the mismatches, you try to get your star players to play against weaker defenders and cause mismatches to where you get open shots for your team. And that's mostly pick and rolls to get the switches, regardless of who's on the floor, who's not. Like, that's just how it is. And that's what, especially even if he wasn't a weak defender, he's so good offensively for them, it's to wear him down. Just like Steph Curry, just like Luka Doncic, like just even Anthony Edwards, even though he's a great defender, it'd be silly to not put him in action on defense. It would be silly to not make him work on defense and make him guard some, you know? So that's just how it is.
Do you think he walks off the dais last night going, I wish I wouldn't have said that? Or at some maybe. Point someone's like, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
There's always some instances where you're like, damn, I probably shouldn't have said that.
I don't know. But then I always think back to like Larry Bird and I think about, Jordan. I mean, those guys
but
they never said it out loud. I know. They'd say it out loud during the game, but they wouldn't say it on the dais.
They'll say it that they wasn't bashful.
No.
I mean, one guy spent the whole half shooting with his left hand just to prove a point.
Yeah. Well, it's part of the game, man. New school, they said you don't want to give everything away and who you're targeting, but that's just how it goes sometimes. And so slip-ups happen, but either way, they're up 2-0, and, I'm sure he's probably thinking he probably said it differently, but he's not disingenuous. He's telling the truth of how he's approaching things.
All right, let's wrap around the rest of the games. Jimmy Butler might be out for a period of time with that one. How much of a brutal hit for Golden State is that?
Huge, huge. As you've seen, they were in disarray last night, playing random different guys that I haven't seen in a while. I was like, wow, is Cam Spence on the floor? What's going on? I'd missed the injury. Then I saw him like, oh, damn, Jimmy's out. And then he's playing Kuminga. So it's going to be different rotations for them. And it changes the dynamic. Now they can key on Steph even more. They get less free throws. You know how good Jimmy is with drawing fouls. So hopefully he's not out for too much longer, because this honestly gives Houston probably, if he's out for two games, it gives them a two-game head start,
All right, we only got about a minute left. Just kind of give me your full wrap on the playoffs right now. Like, you still think we're heading in the same direction as we were talking last week? And should we still kind of be hoping for Boston, Cleveland here, Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I think it's heading in the same direction we spoke about. Those are the top two juggernauts. Milwaukee's not looking that great. Indiana's playing a good pace. New York is very up and down. They don't look as good as I thought they would be. But Detroit's playing, gotta give credit to Detroit. It's the playoffs. It's not easy. Even Boston, Jason Tatum being out, Orlando played well. But if they get healthy, if they're healthy, that's going to be the team, and that's going to be the tough one to beat.
Danny, as always, we know we love talking to you. Next time, we're going to get more football breakdown from you, though. I love it. I love the quarterback talk.
I'm all for it. I haven't watched it in a while, but, yeah, I'm all for it, man. I'll get more into it, so, yeah.
All good. Danny, thank you. We appreciate you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Talk to you soon.
Appreciate you.
Your Cleveland Cavaliers. They take on the Miami Heat tonight, game two of the Eastern Conference playoffs. You can see it on NBA TV. I think also locally FanDuel, right? so you can see. But if you want to watch the NBA TV one, you can, of course. And we welcome in from SiriusXM NBA Radio, NBA Today, the host of NBA Today, Justin Termini, joins us this morning. Hello, Justin.
You can also listen to it on SiriusXM NBA Radio.
You can also talk like this. Sorry, Justin.
Termini, you will be delighted to know that I was in a cab leaving Boston yesterday, going to Logan Airport.
The hell you say?
And the guy had on your station. He had on your station. And I said, hey, who do you like on this station? And he goes, oh, I love Isola. I love Scalabrini. He goes, I love Worldwide Wob.
He did not say Justin Termini, well, though.
That was the end of the conversation.
Wow. Thoughts, Termini, well, go. I mean,
he said he liked that. He liked that the guy from Phoenix, the guy that used to play from Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eddie Johnson. I'm surprised that you actually made it to the airport. The guy wasn't so stupid that he was driving in reverse, because anybody that likes those guys is too dumb to drive a car.
My gosh. All right, Justin
and
Termini.
Thanks for calling me, by the way, when you came here to Your wife run the marathon, correct?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Did you go out there? Were you on the course?
No, I was working, so I didn't go out there. I'm not going to be that close to exercise. No.
Does anybody even care about the Celtics right now? Is it until they get to the Eastern Conference Finals? That's when the city comes alive. Because I got to tell you, I saw more Bruins stuff. I saw more Red Sox stuff. I know they had a series there with the White Sox. I saw more of everybody but the Celtics. What is that all that about?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where you were actually planted. I mean, were you over by, like, the Red Sox game? Because I know they do the marathon Monday. They do the Red Sox game. But I'm living right on top of the actual arena. So it's humming over here in this area. And I think people are probably a little bit on edge in the last 24 hours because you got that bad news on Jason Tatum's thumb.
Well, that's what wrist. That is a big deal right now. Is that considered a huge deal?
I would say so, only because if you look at Tatum, like Tatum had that quote a couple of years ago, he's like, even if it's a game on a random Tuesday in Charlotte, I'm going to play. So the guy never misses any time. He's 114 for 114 in all his postseason games. And I would say more concerning is the fact that he's never missed more than 10 regular season games in this era of load management. So if he's going to miss, he never misses like a random, like I said, game in the middle of the regular season. So if he's doubtful for a game in the postseason, that tells you that the thumb is, or the wrist is probably an issue.
The outstanding Justin Termini joining us on the show. So how long do you think this series goes? Do you think the Cavs win it?
I mean, I never pick a sweep. You're talking about against the Heat, correct?
Obviously, yes.
Well, I mean, I don't know, because obviously you shouldn't need to ask me who's going to win the series. It's going to be Cleveland.
Well, I have to ask you. It's a formality. Maybe you're like, can I actually think the Heat come back and get him? I don't know what you're going to say.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not going to say that. But, so they're going to win it. But I never pick a sweep, although I would pick a sweep with the Thunder and in Memphis. In this one, I would give, like, maybe Miami one game. But, you know, you probably should sweep it. I mean, the talent differential is that big.
What can the Cavs learn from this? Most notably, Kenny Atkinson, as he takes on a guy who has so much playoff experience to get ready for the next round. And then I'm presuming that they will play the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah. I mean, I think you guys kind of got screwed for the second round opponent, because who would you rather face right now, Indiana or New York? And I've been saying this for weeks, not just recently. I think Indiana's a far significantly better team than the Knicks are. So you getting them in the second round, even though you're the one seed, I think hurts a little bit, because I would pick Cleveland in that series, but I don't think it's like it's the foregone conclusion that you would necessarily assume. Like, I think it's a foregone conclusion, as long as Boston is healthy, that they would beat the Knicks in the second round. And I'll say the Knicks will come out of that Piston series, because I think the Knicks are just not good enough. And I think Cleveland, it would have been the same thing. I would have guaranteed Cleveland would have easily beat the Knicks. I wouldn't say that about the Pacers. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I've not been all that worried about the Pacers. They have looked good, but they're playing a Milwaukee team that I feel like they've had a foot out the door, except for Giannis. And they even got a game out of Portis yesterday off the bench. I mean, what do you have, 28 points? And still, they were not a threat. So, the Pacers offensively, I think they can hang a little bit with the Cavs. I just don't know defensively how they're going to do anything to stop the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not talking about just what they've done in this series. If you go back four, you know, the four best teams in the NBA since December 13th are the Thunder, then your Cavs, then the Celtics, and then Indiana. And Indiana's only one game behind the Celtics during that span. So it's been like a four-month, ordeal where Indiana's played this way. And they're also a top-seven defense. Like, I know that would probably shock a ton of people, but they've been a top-10 defense, actually top-7 for 4 months. So, they've been well-rounded. So they scare me a little bit.
Justin Termini with us right now on the hotline. So the Cavs have been going very deep, and they can afford to do it. Kenny Atkinson said, look, that's our philosophy. Meanwhile, you're seeing other teams right now in the playoffs are scared you-know-what to play anything more than like six guys on their team. I mean, look at the Lakers right now who did win last night, but they certainly don't trust a bunch of guys on their bench. Is that a strength for the Cavs that they can maintain that even in a Eastern Conference Finals against the Celtics? Can they feel good playing that many guys?
I mean, I don't know what you think. I would say that's a regular season strength to win a ton of games. It's a regular season strength to be able to rest guys and keep guys fresh, as Kenny Atkinson did all year. It's like you look at the numbers of Mitchell and Garland, et cetera. Like, their minutes per game are far different from guys on the Knicks, guys on the Celtics who play their starters a lot. So I think it's like an advantage in the regular season. I think it's an advantage maybe even when you're playing a series like this where you should win. But I think you got to tighten that up a little bit, probably maybe next round, definitely in the conference finals. Not with guys like, coming off the bench like, DeAndre Hunter or Ty Jerome. Like, they still should be getting a ton of minutes. But, are you going to use, Isaac Okoro as much, a Sam Merrill, a Dean Wade? I don't know about that.
Justin Termini joining us here on the show. What have you thought? Well, first off, is Evan Mobley the defensive player of the year to you?
I voted for Dyson Daniels, but usually I give it to a big guy. I did have Evan Mobley second on my ballot. I think he is going to win it. And basically what I do on that one, because that was one of the hardest ones to vote for, is I'll ask a bunch of different people, like coaches, executives that I know within the league, who do you think? And I got more answers with the Dyson Daniels stuff. Plus, he was doing the historical stuff in regards to the most steals we've seen in, 20, 30, 40 years. So I went with Dyson Daniels. Thought he was surrounded by guys that couldn't defend around him. So he had to do a little bit more work. But I would have no issue with Evan Mobley. Out of all the people I talked to in regards to the bigs, he's the guy that got the nod over Draymond Green.
Did you take any umbrage with Draymond Green campaigning for himself to win the award, basically as like a send-off to his career?
But yeah, I mean, I was flipping out over that. I was saying, like, it sets a bad precedent. And first of all, that's an award that people, try and get a lot. Like, Bam Adebayo is always complaining about it. Anthony Davis is always complaining about it. I thought it would have set a bad precedent if the media caved in, and still they might. We haven't seen the results yet. But if, like, they give it to him over a guy like Evan Mobley, Dyson Daniels, Lou Dort, those guys really didn't say anything about the award. They just actually let their performance speak for itself. So Draymond wasn't even on my first team all defense. He was second team all defense for me.
So Ty Jerome ends up third for sixth man of the year, Hunter fourth. And you saw Jerome was electrifying in the playoff debut with the Cavs. Just how much of a difference maker do you think he truly can be for this Cavs team if they're going to make a big-time run in the playoffs?
No, I mean, listen, he's capable of being the best bench guy in the entire NBA. He's that good. You saw it in game one. You saw it throughout the course of the season. Pritchard, I think, is the better passer. Pritchard's the better rebounder. He's the better defender. But in regards to, like, explosive offense of output, like, Jerome's right up there. So, I think that's huge. If you get, like, a guy like that can give you a 28-point game in the Eastern Conference Finals where he wins you a game and it's not Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland or Evan Mobley or Jared Allen, then that's huge. So, he's been awesome. I guess, like, this is a question for after the season, but now it's about trying to hold on to him.
Who's the biggest threat in the West?
So the threat to Oklahoma City, since Oklahoma City's the favorite, mm-hmm. I think it's the Clippers. I'm surprised Denver has even been able to hold tough with them through the first two games, because I think LA is a lot better team than Denver. I think they're the second best team in the Western Conference. It's been that way for the last couple of months, especially with Kawhi playing at this level.
LeBron last night, the box score doesn't necessarily jump out at you, but he was really effective in an ugly game, a defensive struggle. Do you think the Lakers are going to come back and win this series now against the T-Wolves after they pulled that off yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, with Minnesota, I think Minnesota is like the most extreme team from, like, you know, they could basically go all the way to the conference finals, but they could also lose in four or five games. Now they can't lose in four, but I'm talking about what I felt about them prior to the start of the series. They could also lose in four or five games in the first round because they just have these massive swings where they'll lose to the Pelicans at home, and then the next night, you know, they'll beat the they'll hang tough with the Thunder on the road. But ultimately, I think that the Lakers and their experience ends up pulling it out.
Justin Termini, SiriusXM NBA Radio on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Justin, thank you very much for the time.
Yeah, and if I'm in Cleveland for the finals this year, I guess I don't say hello and let you guys know I'm here, since that's what Lima did when he was here in Boston.
Now, Termini, there is a chance because the Cleveland Marathon is coming up. And as you know, I'm the MC of that great event. So if you come through here for the big race, which is in 23 days, May 17th, could be in the throes of, the Eastern Conference Finals. You could be here. Maybe you could run the 10K.
If I didn't go to the Boston Marathon, which is a far more prestigious marathon, why the hell would I show up to the Cleveland Marathon?
Damn it.
Look, you guys have some tradition on us. There's no doubt. But I'm determined to enhance the profile of the Cleveland Marathon.
Do you do anything in the community?
Well, then they better get an MC. I harass the community.
Well, I'm glad you're contributing to society. It's a very nice thing.
Well, I just contributed by coming on and doing you guys a favor.
Justin, thank you for the time.
All right, farewell.
Justin Termini, SiriusXM NBA Radio on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
We're talking about depth, and obviously Kenny Atkinson, and he had a chance to talk, over the last few days about how their philosophy. Other teams are only going to play, like, really the Lakers played seven guys big minutes yesterday, right? And that's something that LeBron's older, right? Like, he can't really be doing that. To make a full run, maybe he's the one guy that can because he's so such a freak still at this stage. The Cavs, I think, are going to be just fine playing a bunch of guys this series and probably against the Pacers next series.
You really think so about the Pacers, though? They look good. They look real tough. Like, it's like, oh, okay.
They do. I still...
Just putting carts before horses here.
Like, I think the Pacers will win a game or two. I think they'll threaten. They'll be much more of a threat than the Heat will. I still don't see them winning the series. I still think the Cavs are just better. Yeah, I'm putting the cart before the horse because I think the Cavs are that good. And now Darius kind of turning things around here the last few weeks of the season after he was in that two-month slump. That is huge. And then you got Ty Jerome coming off the bench. Like, that guy would start now on a bunch of teams in the NBA, maybe even some playoff teams.